Okay, once again, our title is a framework for coordination and synchronization of media. I'm Roger Dannenberg, and this is work with Dawin and Gus. So imagine you want to get together with some friends and play some rock music, but maybe you're missing a player, let's say a bass player. So wouldn't it be great if you could, for the, you know, just for that session, if you could download a bass player that would play with you and you know, fill the role, and you could get on with making some music. So that's the general theme of the work that we've been doing. And you might think that, you know, with all the work that's been done in music and interaction and computer music, that there would be some solutions. So just to frame the work that we're doing a little bit, let me point out that there's what I would call interactive computer music systems, but they tend to be oriented towards music that's very open and free, and not constrained by chord progressions and lead sheets, and so these systems would be fairly lost trying to play bass in a conventional band. So you might also think, well, you know, we have score following and computer accompaniment, and those kinds of systems are oriented towards musicians playing scores, but a typical rock band, the guitar player is free to change strumming patterns and chord voicings, and the drummer can throw in licks and probably isn't reading music to begin with. And so score following doesn't make a lot of sense. And then also you could deal with fixed media, in other words, record the bass and just play audio files like we see in Music Minus One and karaoke. But that's pretty limiting for the other players and not so much fun. So we think that there's a pretty broad region kind of in the middle of this space for popular music, including rock and jazz and folk. And we call this human-computer music performance. And it's a very large area that's very open for exploration, but we're going to talk about two contributions today. The coordination of sensors, players, and displays. So that's kind of a software architecture issue. And then there's an interesting human-computer interaction issue, which is using music notation as an interactive medium. So that's my introduction, and I'm going to talk about these two contributions. We'll give a short demo and conclusions. So let's talk about coordination and software first. So this is really the main framework part of the talk. So we believe that these human-computer music performance systems will have, in order to work, they're going to have many sensors, so keyboards, pedals, touchscreens, and so on. And also they're going to deal with multiple media, so MIDI files, audio files, you know, robots, music notation, the list goes on. And so we want to be able to coordinate all of these things, and we want to be able to integrate different subsystems and have them be synchronized. And so that's the focus of this part of the talk. And our solution to this problem is, first of all, we assume that all systems agree on real time through clock synchronization protocols, which I won't talk about, but it's pretty easily done. The second thing is that we assume that, or design the system so that music position is given in terms of beats and measures, and that's consistent across different media, which actually creates some interesting problems that I won't go into in detail. But let's assume that we can specify a musical position across media with just one number, which is the beat. And so then to synchronize, we use mapping from real time to beats. And I'll talk about that in a little more detail in a moment. So we end up with a software configuration that looks kind of like this. We have a kind of centralized control through an object that we call the conductor, and the conductor receives messages to start stop, set position, set time map. And the conductor's job is to distribute this information to multiple players, so that the player is an abstract class that can manage any kind of medium, MIDI, audio, you know, that whole list. And players are supposed to follow the timing information they get from the conductor so that they all stay together. And they use local real-time schedulers to schedule whatever it is that they do. So that's the high-level framework. So I want to talk about this mapping now. So one problem that we face, going back, is that there can be some unknown latency between the conductor and the player. There could be bandwidth issues. So we don't want to do something like have the conductor just spew out, you know, current musical location constantly to all the players. And if the conductor just sends out occasional updates to say here's the time and here's the tempo, then there could be some unknown latency in that message reaching the players. So again, it makes synchronization difficult. And so instead we use this time-independent representation, which is very simple. It's just a linear mapping from real time to beat time. So what this says is that at some time in the past, T0, we were at B0, which is a beat. We express beats as real numbers, so it's not an integer beat, but just a continuous position. And so at T0, B0, we, and since then, we have been proceeding at tempo of S beats per second. And so if you ship that kind of information around, which is just a triple of three numbers, then players can locally, in real time, translate from time to beat. And if it takes, you know, any amount of time for this mapping to reach the player, it doesn't become out of date. It doesn't really matter if it's late, because it's a mapping from time. It's not a single time point. And it's valid for into the future until you change the mapping. So changing the mapping is an interesting problem too. I mean, the mapping will change. So for example, if you have a beat tracker that's trying to help you synchronize, and it's updating its notion of score position and tempo every beat, then these time mappings have to be updated. When you update the time map, we have it. This is a figure from our paper. This black line on the bottom represents the old time map, and we get a new time map represented by the blue line. And in this case, this is happening at time T1, which is right here with where the cursor is. And you notice there's a discontinuity between the old time map and the new one. So we don't want musical time to jump suddenly. And so what we want to do instead is have a smooth interpolation. In our case, we consider the fact that there's latency in all of these systems. So if you're an audio player doing audio time stretching, there's going to be some latency between by which you have to compute ahead and fill some audio buffers. And you really don't have the option of changing the tempo until that latency into the future. And so we have to construct a mapping that goes up to, in this case, T1 plus L. So this is the future point at which you're presently computing new information. And you can start changing the tempo at that point to construct this red line that will smoothly go from where you're going to be to where you want to be. And so players do this, and we've built software where we can inherit the computation and just kind of share that across different players and different latencies. Otherwise, this scheme is similar to, I mean, it's been kind of reinvented several times, mainly in the area of music conducting systems. Okay, so that's part one. Part two, I want to talk about music notation. And the main point is that we have these abstract players that typically receive some input and produce musical output, or audio output. But we also are interested in synchronizing other media, including music notation. So we can subclass this abstract player and get a score player. And so the output of the score player is page turning and cursor updates. And an interesting thing about this is that now we can use music notation as both an output device and an input device. So we can point to the music notation and say, hey, I want to start here, or I want the computer bass player to go here, or give it a cue at some musical location, which seems like a very intuitive kind of interface. So we are going to switch to a demo. I'm going to let Gus drive. And so what we're seeing on the screen is a bitmap of some music notation. So our system just takes images in. And then to deal with time, we currently manually annotate the notation. So we can mark where the measures are and where the systems are. And once we've done that, we can, and repeat signs. Once we've manually annotated some structure, we can turn on the performance mode of the display, and the system can slice up the images into systems and display them sequentially in the dynamic performance order. So let's go ahead and start. And you see the, I don't know if I can be heard. Okay, so you can see the cursor moving, synchronized with the music. And just to make the point, let's stop this. And now we'll using this notation as input, let's tell the system to start at some location. So we can scroll down. We click on the start tool, and we say start here. So now the score is sending information to the conductor. Okay, and so imagine that somebody's going to count off, and the computer system is sensing tempo and sensing beats, and now it knows where to start. We're going to sort of fake that now by just tapping on a button to give tempo, but go ahead and we'll start to play here. So notice the tempo is changing because we're getting real-time beat input. That's going through the conductor to all the players. And so you see that the audio is synchronized, remains synchronized to the score display. Okay. So that's our demo. And, here we go. There we go. Okay, so to summarize, we're interested in human-computer music performance systems that integrate interfaces with automatic music listening and live performance. And we've talked about two different things. First of all, the coordination of music and a kind of a software object-oriented architecture with conductors and players and some abstractions for dealing with tempo that allow us to build modular systems with managing different media and keeping synchronization. And the second point is that we've shown how you can take just static bitmaps of music notation and very quickly turn those into dynamic, interactive media. And that seems like a very intuitive way for musicians to interact with these future systems we want to build. So in conclusion, we've presented this flexible framework, and I think this whole area is very open to some interesting human-computer interaction explorations of new types of interfaces, new devices, new interaction techniques, all to assist with live music performance. Thank you.
Yeah, okay, so we have time for questions. Okay. Up there, back. I think there was somebody behind you beforehand. Yeah, anyways.
Hi, my name is Dominique Faubert, and I'm from Grammes in France. And so the question is, you described how to make the... actually, I have two questions. The first one is what system are you using for the score rendering? And the second one, more or less related to the first one, you described how you make the relation between the musical time, between beats and real time, but how do you make the relationship between the graphic space, the space of the score, and the time?
Yeah, okay. I think I can switch. Yeah, we're still up here. So the system is implemented in Serpent, which is a real-time subset of Python that I implemented, and I use it for a lot of things. That's just my choice of implementation. So the graphics is actually WX Windows graphics, and so there's nothing special about the music notation. These are just bitmaps, and in fact, I wonder if this will work. Maybe. We could. You could actually draw your own. You could start with blank page and draw your own score, and actually use that as a score. And so then to do the mapping from to get musical time onto the score, we're annotating by hand. So currently we just click on each bar line using a graphics tool and indicate meters of how many beats per bar line, and we split up the staves and put in repeat signs. But then we construct that mapping from the annotation.
Okay, back behind. There's somebody up there.
Hi.
Yeah. I think he was first.
Hi, I'm Sam Aaron from the University of Cambridge. I'm interested in your motivations for why you wanted to use the bitmap rendering, or at least extract the notes from the bitmap rather than using an abstract notation like music XML or some other sort of abstract tree that describes the music.
If we had access to a music XML engine and it was easy to work with, that would certainly be an alternative and in some cases very desirable way to get music notation up. In practice, in my real musician practice, when I go to a rehearsal, no one hands me an XML file on a USB stick. We get paper, and so it's very attractive to me to imagine just pulling out a digital camera or a phone and just take a picture of the paper on your music stand and quickly load it into your machine and have machine readable music.
There's one over here.
Yeah. Hi, I'm Christian Jacquemin from University Paris Sud. I was wondering whether there couldn't be another approach to the issue you addressed that wouldn't be based on the conductor, but more on message exchanges between the different instruments or players that would be able to deal with more distributed performance where there wouldn't be a leader, but then there would be more a kind of low latency messaging system where you would try to synchronize through messages, and which then could cope also perhaps with networked performance and other types of performance where the notion of conductor wouldn't be relevant.
Yeah, good question. Let me go back and to this picture. Okay, so so this is a conductor. I mean, this is a software component called a conductor, but okay. It's not a human conductor. And so I'm imagining the system would mainly be used in popular music where there is no conductor. Yeah. And so in fact, that means, and this talk did not consider the sensor part of the architecture at all, but in a realization, I would expect multiple sensors from multiple musicians collaborating, and all of those sensors would have to be integrated somehow to to enable the computer to listen to the rest of the band and to play with the band.
Okay.
Okay, well, I think we should move on. Let's thank our speakers again.